I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Good morning, good morning, good morning all. This is, well, you know who it is. It's Bob Sherwood. I'm sure you know because that's how you got here. So you probably wonder what I've been doing all week. At least some of you have. Maybe most of you didn't really care, don't give a damn. That's all right. But here's what I was doing. I was taking a four-day course in mediation. I learned a lot about mediation this week. Now, mediation is different than arbitration, as I learned this week. I learned that mediation solves problems like, well, let me give you an example. A neighbor's limb hangs over your yard. It drops walnuts in your yard. You step on the walnuts. You hurt yourself. You want your neighbor to cut the limb off or pick up the walnuts. He doesn't do it. So you sue him in small claims court. And by the way, this happens all the time. It's not about a tree. It's about a dog barking. It's about a statue in your yard. It's any number of things. So rather than go next door and talk to the person about it like adults would, you go to small claims court. You file essentially litigation. It costs $50 in most cases. And your neighbor gets served with a citation, which he loves you for now, right? Now, small claims court gets real busy with all of these little bitty things that could be solved by two adults talking to one another. That doesn't happen. Who knows why? Maybe it goes way back to a parenting issue. But in many of the cases I looked at, the two people that were involved in the dispute never even discussed it with each other. They just said, he's not doing anything about it. I'll go to small claims court. Now, some people avoid conflict necessarily, so they wouldn't go next door to their neighbor and say, that limb's causing me a problem. They would simply sue them in small claims court. Well, that makes your neighbor really happy, doesn't it? And is it one way to solidify a long-term relationship with your neighbor by suing him for something that you never even talked about with him? So what small claims court does, they see all these old children. I call them old children. They're 45-year-old people that are still children. And they couldn't solve the problem, didn't really wish to discuss the problem with their neighbor, didn't communicate with their neighbor, didn't simply go out and cut the limb off. They go to small claims court, and the judge, of course, which is what I would do if I were a judge, I'd say, look, go to mediation. Now, it turns out, as I understand it now, there's a room at a small claims court where mediators sit, four or five mediators. They come there in the morning, and they sit there, and they talk, I guess, mediation talk to each other. And as the judge that day instructs people that are in a dispute to go to mediation, a mediator is assigned. So the mediator, the assigned mediator, let's say that was me, for example, Bob Sherwood. So Bob would go out, find the two people that the judge assigned me to mediate, and I take them to another room, and we start the mediation process. Now, mediation is different than arbitration in the following way. Among it, there's other ways, but this is a primary way. In arbitration, the arbitrator can suggest a solution. He can simply say, look, you two are arguing over money. Why don't you just split the difference? He can actually make a suggestion. He can go one step further. If they don't agree, he can specify a final solution, sign off on it, and give it to the judge. The arbitrator can actually not only make a suggestion, but define the solution. He can specify what it is. I think Joe should pay Jack $800. End of arbitration. Now, mediation is different. Mediation, a form of alternative dispute resolution, the new science, alternative dispute resolution, of which we have conciliation, mediation, arbitration, and then, of course, the ultimate way we settle disputes is through war. And literally in the discussion of alternative dispute resolutions, or ADRs, as they're called, the last one is war. which is kind of funny. Anyway, so the mediator takes Jack and Jill into the room and starts to explain the mediation process. And the mediator, as distinct from an arbitrator, the mediator has to remain neutral. The mediator cannot suggest a solution. Well, they can in some instances, but they can't specify a solution because the final solution has to be agreed to by both parties, as distinct from an arbitration where they may not agree with the solution that the arbitrator has specified. In mediation, both parties have to sign a document that's written during the mediation process that specifies what they've agreed to, and they have to agree to it. Well, they don't have to sign it, of course, but the idea is that the mediator doesn't define the solution. The two people sitting across the table from each other, they define the solution themselves. Now, what does the mediator do? Interesting here. The mediator helps them solve their problem by asking open-ended questions, by creating a dialogue between the two people. And they have different rules for this, and I'm going to tell you what these rules are. I think they're kind of interesting, and they're rules that we can use in our everyday life. And some of us probably do it naturally now, but some of us maybe need a little help with it. And the three rules, you might want to write this down if you're listening and have some paper in front of you, are reflective, reframing, and of course, questions. Questions are the key. Now, I'm going to talk about questions just for a second. We all know the difference between an open-ended question and a question that's not open-ended. For example, an open-ended question is describe the way you feel. What did you think about this? How did you feel when that happened? What did you do about it? You know, who, what, where, and when? Asking open-ended questions. The closed-ended question is where you're answering the question when you ask it, such as, what time is it? It's yes or no answer. It's not an open-ended question. It's kind of a binary. Open-ended questions require more than one or two words to answer. And it's good to have a lot of those around when you're talking to people because they create conversation. They create dialogue. And, of course, that's what we want in a mediation. We want the two people who may not have ever talked to each other, even though they're neighbors, to start a dialogue, and hopefully their adult training or their adult thinking will help them come to a solution that, frankly, they may have come to anyway if they would have started talking together rather than suing each other. So that's the question component. Now, once a person responds, there's a technique called reframing. And again, many of us do it naturally. I ask you a question. You say, I ask, how do you feel about something? You say, well, it made me feel bad. I got kind of sick at night. So reframing is now going back to that same person saying, so let me see if I heard you correctly. You became sick and it lasted all night. So you reframe the question, and essentially by restating it in other terms, but in a way you're now asking the person, did I reframe it correctly? Did I understand you correctly? And that gives you a kind of a common ground in the discussion. Hopefully you reframed it correctly, and they say, yes, that's what I meant. So now you've reframed it. You've created a dialogue between you and, let's say, party A. Now you go to party B and start the same process. So you've got questions, you got reframing. Then you've got another term is called reflective. Now reflective is when you're thinking about what they're saying and you're trying to determine what is the issue involved here. You may have heard the podcast I put out, I don't know, last week on the orange problem. Two brothers arguing over an orange. The mother finally split the orange in half. Each got half. One took his half, ate the fruit, threw the peeling away. The other took his half, threw the fruit away, and used the peeling for garnish on some dessert. If they would have disclosed these two things to each other, or if the mother would have discovered the real interest, they both could have got a whole orange full of fruit and a whole orange full of skin peeling. Understand? Think about that when you're doing some type of negotiating with someone about the orange problem. So, in other words, what you're hearing in the dispute may not be what they really want. And it's a difference between positions and interests, right? My position is I want the orange. The other position is that I want the orange. But that wasn't their interest. One wanted the fruit and one wanted the skin. So we have to determine in any kind of negotiation or discussion, and we have these all day long, whether you're a doctor or a lawyer or a person in the technology field, all day long you're dealing with some level of conflict, not major conflicts, not things that are going to go to war, but conflicts with your boss. Let's call them disagreements if you want. There's a little bit of a difference between a conflict and disagreement, but some people put it in the same arena. Now, so we have three things we've talked about: reflective, really thinking about what they're saying, reframing the question, reframing their response, actually, and then the questions that we're asking. So we can actually use those things in our daily life. Go back to the guy who ordered the cheeseburger without onions, and the waiter gave him a cheeseburger with onions. If he takes a position as, I was right, I ordered the cheeseburger without onions, and the waiter takes a position, you did not. We've now talked about positions rather than interests. The interests really are, the waiter really wants to keep a person happy, generally, and the person wants a cheeseburger with no onions. So those are many, many solutions when we focus on interests. If we focus on positions, what do we have? You guessed it, an argument. And the more we argue about positions, the more we take a stronger and stronger position, because deep down, none of us really like being wrong or being accused of being wrong. So, three things: reflective, reframing, and questions. And then thinking about positions versus interests. My position is I want you to pay me the $2,800 you owe me. But my interest might be differently. My interest might be, you've never once mentioned you owe me this money. Well, I can tell you from experience, I loaned a person some money one time years ago. And years went by, and they never mentioned a single word about the money. They never said they're going to pay me. I didn't think they were ever going to pay me, and frankly, I didn't care. But years go by, they never mentioned it. They stopped inviting me over to their house. I guess they were embarrassed. And one day I got mad. I got angry. And I wrote them a letter and I said, pay up. Now they finally paid up. But you know, if they would have mentioned that they intended to pay up all along, I would have said many times, don't worry about it. It's over. If your ship comes in, fine, write me a check. But don't worry about it. But they never did that. They never said a single word. So my interest was, I was hurt. I felt taken advantage of. See, that's an interest as opposed to a position. Maybe they were afraid to bring it up. I don't know. Maybe they were too embarrassed. In any event, eventually they paid me back and we still don't talk. So I guess we wound up in the same point we were anyway. So there are some things to think about today. As you know, and you can tell from this podcast, I'm moving away from political podcasts into what I call helpful, thought-provoking snippets that you can use tomorrow, and you can use today, right? Today, if you think about it, you can begin thinking about positions versus interests in any kind of discussion, and using reflective, thinking about what they're saying, reframing the question to make sure you understand, and asking open-ended questions. Open-ended questions. You might, in fact, this is what I've been trying to do yesterday, write down a whole list of open-ended questions or open-ended question words. Words that are questions that are open-ended that begin with certain words like describe, how, what, where. Those kind of open-ended questions. As opposed to positions. You're sick. You're not going to get better. Or how do you feel? Are you taking care of the things you need to take care of, or, you know, those kind of things. I'm not nailing this part of the podcast, I understand. So, but I think you get the point. That's all I'm going to do for today. That's 15 minutes of podcast by Sherwood. That's probably all you'll want to listen to today. But take a listen, because I think you'll find out these things are important.